Welcome to the Broadway Radio Show. I'm Donald Feltham, and we have two guests with us on this edition. I have got Lizette Gladowski and Richard C. Walter, and they are the writers behind a brand new musical called Madame Clicquot, a revolutionary musical. And I've actually been studying up on Madame Clicquot, prepping for this interview, but because obviously everybody knows Veuve Clicquot, the champagne, and it's really the story about the woman behind it many hundreds of years ago, which was a fascinating story when I started reading up on it. And I was like, wow, I did not know this, even though I actually have a bottle of it in my refrigerator right now. anyway, before we get started talking about the show, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourselves, where you went to school, how you got involved in musical theater, and then how you guys teamed up and actually met and teamed up for the show.
Yeah.
Who wants to go first?
I can take the first. So I think we both sort of came up as songwriters from a pretty early age. And I followed that to my undergrad degree in musical composition, and then eventually to Tisch at NYU for musical theater composition, where Lisette and I did meet. And we were actually paired together for the applicants weekend of that program, which is where they bring together, you know, the folks who have applied and kind of made through the first round, and they team you up for a weekend with a random person who's also applied and gotten there, and you meet, and you have 24 hours to write a song. And so we met and said hello, and then went into a practice room and sat down at a piano with our topic, and we wrote, and it clicked immediately. I mean, we found that we wrote together really wonderfully, and we had such a fun time. We went out to lunch and chatted, and then we went and played songs on the piano, and in you know, 24 hours we had a song, and we played it, and we never stopped writing after that.
Yeah, I grew up in a very theatrical family, in ballet and musical theater and medicine and all of the things. And I have been performing as an actor since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I went to college, majored in acting and musical theater. And so bringing that into the writing world, I'd written a lot of singer-songwriter style things, but started really writing musical theater work in high school, and then more so in college. And then when we went to NYU, it was great because we got to write all this stuff, but then everyone was also using me to sing all of their music. So I got to keep going, which was fun. But yeah, it's when this applicants weekend thing happened, what was really special about it is that Richie and I met before we knew we were paired. And it was one of those meet and greets, and everyone was kind of mingling around, and we saw each other and we're like, hey, I feel this pull. We should be in each other's lives. And we both realized that we both had family in North Carolina, and we were just exchanging phone numbers when they called us into the big room, and they're like, okay, we got you paired up. And it turns out we were paired. So we're very grateful for the person who paired us together in the first place. But yeah, having a prompt and 24 hours to write a song seemed daunting, especially when you don't know how it's going to go or the person's style or anything. But it was so easy. It was so easy. When we were writing together, that, I mean, we finished that song so fast. But yeah, like Richie said, since then we haven't stopped. So that's us.
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, I've interviewed multiple songwriting teams, or, you know, one half of a songwriting team before, and you guys are a little bit different because you both write book lyrics and music. Whereas, you know, usually you get someone who writes music and then they work with somebody who writes lyrics. And sometimes the lyricist is also a librettist. But you guys do all three. Both of you do all three. So how does that collaboration work out with you guys? Because it's a little different, right?
It's so much fun. And I think, I mean, we're such fans of each other too. And like, I mean, do you remember, I came to see a show she wrote called Velvet Over Steel completely on her own, book, music, and lyrics. And it was during our NYU days, but I flew down to see it. And I was just like, you know, sitting in the audience crying. I mean, she's such an incredible writer. And then she'll sing, you know, songs that I've written for my song cycle or other shows that I've written. So I feel like we we have such respect for each other's work outside of our collaborations. And I think that makes it so when we come together and sit in a room, nothing's off the table. We can really bring out ideas, and we know that we're going to listen to them and we're going to flesh them out and try whatever. And it really kind of takes a lot of the pressure off of coming up with ideas and trying to impress somebody, because, you know, being impressed with each other is sort of the baseline for us. And so it's exciting to be.
Oh yeah, definitely. And it's fun because we both trust each other's judgment so much that when we have something going on, when we're writing something and someone doesn't feel sold on it, the other person knows, okay, wait, then there's a better mm-hmm. thing to do, because until we both feel great about it, it's not there yet. And so writing this show, well, all of our shows, but specifically Madame Clicquot, the words, the music, it doesn't matter if like one person maybe starts with a lyric or maybe one person starts with a melody. And we go, oh, hey, what do you think about this? Oh my gosh, that makes me think of da 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 da, or vice mm-hmm. versa. But yeah, over you go through the whole script and the whole score, and there's not a note or a word that we both haven't signed off on in some in some way, which makes it really feel like ours. And it's really fun because, you know, people be like, oh, which person wrote this line? We're going, I don't know.
I really don't remember. Yeah.
Right. Well, it's a genuine collaboration.
When I look in your eyes, I see the stained glass windows. Notre Dame, the wedding of my dreams. When I gaze in your eyes, I don't see cellar shadows. Palm to palm, the new wedding of my dreams. Would it surprise my father to know I'm falling for the man he chose for me? Swinging vine to vine, do I let go? Saw before the dreamer that you've been hiding. Could it be a kind of kindred soul? Never assumed before, two opposites colliding. I can see a life that's rich and full. So many years together, can we make it together? I'll be by your side, keeping our secrets. Would it surprise our fathers to know I'm falling for the one he chose for me? Swinging by divine, do I let go and fall before the one he chose for me? Do I?
Running all my life, but all I want to do is stand here with you.
Hiding in the skies, but all I want to do is ring out the bells with you. Death, do we part? You have my heart. I'm falling for the one he chose for me. Let the revolution come and go.
So talk to me about what drew you to Madame Clicquot and wanting to do a show about her.
Yeah. Champagne, sort of like you mentioned, you have a bottle in your fridge. Like that was always sort of around for celebrations and fun. And I became really interested. I've always sort of loved history and learning the backstory of things. And so I started kind of, you know, looking up and similar to your experience, everything I found out was like, what? That's wild. And I would just sort of, I thought her story was just incredible. And I sort of kept that idea, I guess, percolating in the back of my head as like that could one day be a cool thing. And then when I met Lisette and she, you know, her family, she grew up in wine country and I loved her writing style. And I was like, I think this would be a really good thing for us to write. And so I brought it up to her and she was like, yeah, wine and this like incredible woman who trailblazed this career and changed the champagne industry. And she's like, perfect, let's do it. And so she also started reading and we would make notes and just pass them around to each other. And yeah, we sat down to write the first song. And we just really, I don't know, we felt really connected to this story and found a way in through that first song. And it's been really exciting.
There's something that we both are big history nerds too. So there's so much excitement in writing, not only like historical facts and turning it into these beautiful musicals, but also being able to take our spin on the details that were left out of this woman's story. So we get to be as authentic and, you know, properly researched as possible and get as many facts. Cause that's what's fun about her story is all these crazy things happened. You don't have to make that up. It's right there. And the other characters in her life, like growing up and her family being connected with Napoleon Bonaparte and how she struggled with that as he became in power, and Jean-Remy Moët of Moët and Chandon, he was her rival and neighbor, and all these really amazing, colorful characters that you can't just make up. They're there. Mm-hmm. And so that they're all in one place is so exciting for this story. But it's also fun being able to put our spin on it and bring light to all the missing details. Because right after the revolution, the French Revolution, there's nothing on her life for about 10 years, nothing. So we get to be like, well, what happened there? How do we come up with stuff that helps her story go through? Because our show takes place from her early years, she was like 10 or something like that, to her first huge international success when she was in her late 30s. So we stop after that because if we kept going, the show would be 5 hours long.
Yes.
We try to like get all the details as much as we can and the celebration and the hardships that she went through all the way around. And she suffered major tragedies. I mean, a lot of people don't realize that veuve means widow. So the fact that we get to tell this story and bring that man into the story too, we get to see their relationship together and we get to say like what happened before and what happened after.
Well, it's one of the things that you kind of touched on, which is also something I have in my notes, which is it's always difficult, I think, or people don't realize how difficult it is for writers to take characters or historical figures from many years ago. This is like 18th century we're talking about. And figure out what piece of the history you want to tell and also how you are telling, how you convert these historical figures into what is basically a modern art piece. Musical theater is modern. Broadway yeah. musical theater is modern compared to what yeah. we're talking about. And so it's converting these historical figures into a modern setting, sort of, but also making it relatable to a 21st century audience. You know, what about these characters and what about their story makes it relatable and entertaining, hopefully, to a 21st century audience?
I think in the last 250 years, mm-hmm. things have gotten better for women.
Mm-hmm.
Not great. So we can still pull from that. And we watch her struggling through this time as she was known as the first modern businesswoman. And she defied the status quo. Everyone was against her. She should not be in business. She should not be calling the shots. She should not do this. The Napoleonic Code kept her from doing all of that. she found a weird loophole when her husband died, because suddenly being a widow, she had these assets. And so she took charge and, you know, went forward through this and through a really, you know, huge political turmoil that was going on around her. And today, you know, the world is a kind of scary place again. And, you know, we're still fighting for equal pay. We're still fighting to be seen. And I hope that people can watch this and go, oh, things still need to be better, but also mm-hmm. walk away feeling inspired that if she could do it then, and it is better now, we're not giving up. We can persevere. We can go get our dreams. We can go do the thing. And
how are you guys envisioning the show? Because as I was kind of leading to a little bit, is that you're taking some major moments in history. You've got Napoleon Bonaparte, you've got the French Revolution, you've got these big things, but it sounds to me from what I've read about the show and listening to songs from the EP, it's also the tricky part of dealing with these things that are kind of on a grand scale, but still making the story very intimate, because mm-hmm. it really is about this one woman, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The show is I think it's an undeniably big show. I mean, it's got a huge, you know, cast of characters, a really notable cast of characters too, from history, like you mentioned. And so there are such big moments that we want to treat with, you know, grandeur in the show as well. We want to have those moments. And the way we sort of kick off the show with the song Revolutionary, which is basically, you know, an 8 minutes sequence of where, you know, young Barb Nicole at 10 years old is rescued through the streets of Rennes by her dressmaker at the outbreak of the French Revolution. And so this kind of sets the stage for so many things that happen in the musical, but it also gives us a taste of, this is going to be that kind of a show. It's going to be big. It's going to have these moments that feel huge, but it's also, it helps us when we draw back and have these really intimate and personal moments with these characters. It feels, you know, kind of breathless in a way when you all of a sudden, you know, have these very small moments that mean so much. And so that's sort of the balance that we really are hoping to strike with the bigger production when that comes along.
I think what's also exciting about that very thing is when we get to see the big world moments in the show, I think it makes a bigger impact on the smaller intimate moments on her life. So it's not just, oh, we're telling her story and she got told no. And oh, she got told no again. Oh no, we're just going to keep going. We also get the backdrop of there's a war outside and she's still trying to just sell wine. Right. She's trying to do this thing. And, you know, like during the pandemic, we're trying to survive, but we're also just trying to write this musical, right? There's some fun parallels there, but I think the impact is greater when you get to see the stakes that are affecting her environment, her life, not just in her day-to-day, her day-to-day. Yeah.
Right. That's always such a tricky balance to maintain, because, you know, and one of the rules in musical theater is show me, don't tell me. And, mm-hmm. you know, when you do have these big historical events, you can't ignore them and you can't pretend they're happening off stage have people just come on and say, oh, hey, there's a French Revolution going on outside. Right. Nobody can see, you guys can't see it. But, you know, so you have to, it's always so difficult. And I always am impressed when people tackle that kind of thing, because you are dealing with very big events in history. But at the same time, the audience is relating to this single woman who in her own right is a fascinating character, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, she has such an amazing story. I mean, when I looked it up, I did not know so many of the things that she was so important in terms of the champagne industry, right? Talk a little bit about, because some people may not know any of the things that she really was kind of a groundbreaker about.
Oh man. Yeah. I mean, she was the first to create rosé champagne, which right. I love, by adding still red wine to her blends. She also invented the riddling table, which was like a revolutionary way of creating clear champagne, which up until then, was a real gamble. I mean, and it was a costly one too for a lot of champagne makers, and it inhibited the mass production of champagne really for a long time because it was just too expensive and too much of a risk to maybe not even get a usable product. And so she created a way where she was able to really consistently make clear champagne, and that is still used today. That they still use riddling tables to make wine clear champagne clear. So yeah,
because of that invention, the cost went down, the hours went down. So she actually made champagne really accessible to everyone, not just the royals. And so she's really responsible for how we celebrate today, right? We go get a bottle of champagne, mm-hmm. it's for us common people, not just kings and queens, but that's really because of her. And you know, we go through life kind of not really realizing that was not a thing at one point.
I understand you feel unsure. They say wine is hard to sell, but madame, you have the cure. For as far as I can tell, when they see something alluring, noble palates will start stirring, and I promise this time won't be like the last. They'll buy your wine, and soon you'll find this opportunity hasn't passed. Luxury, come and see, the world is begging for it. Opulence makes more sense, and folks are paying for it. And I'm quite sure that your wine is worth much more. What liquor might have in store sure does excite me. The world wants luxury. I understand you're overwhelmed. You're not salesman, there's no question. But my friends, you have me now, and I'm the best in my profession. See, you have something fantastic, so I'm quite enthusiastic. Yes, I feel it in my bones, we have a chance. Don't waver now, for I know how to sell extravagance beyond France. Luxury, can't you see? I have my ways, don't doubt it. Opulence makes more sense, and they can't live without it. And I'm quite sure that your wine is worth much more. What liquor might have in store sure does excite me. The world wants luxury. It's just about being at the right place at the right time. You'll see, I know my way around. I'm through every port of entry. You'll see. So what if your first try blew up in flames? You two just keep doing what you're doing. Blend your top-notch wine and I will do the work. Business soon will start to soar. What liquor might have in store sure does excite me. Your precious wine will shine forever brightly. You'll be among the best of them and rightly. Soon the world will have your luxury.
You know, her whole life was kind of, she was so full of these moments of kind of inspiration where she was like, oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to change this. And we, when we think about the show and when we were kind of putting together, how do we want to, you know, mark off the period of time in her life that we really want to dig into? I think these moments up until this first huge success were so important to us because that's how not only we learn about what happened, but it's exciting to watch her discover what needs to be done and her to make those decisions. And we like to say that we take the show up until the point where you can say, and the rest is history. Like, then you sort of know, the legacy mm-hmm. is there. We know what's going to happen.
Right.
So that's sort of where we end it. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the EP that you're yeah. releasing, because as the listeners know, because of there's so many different people who've been on the show talking about the albums that they've created, mm-hmm. putting together an album is a pretty big task under any circumstance, under any circumstance. And so talk a little bit about the whole putting together this EP, because it's also a very lavishly produced EP. It's not someone sitting in a piano with a couple of singers singing the songs like a demo. It's a mm-hmm. full on produced EP, which I think it's 6 songs, correct?
Yes.
So talk about the whole process of putting this album together.
It's been magical and crazy, and I have so much new respect for every cast album that exists out there because of mm-hmm. all the that have to be involved. Well, the first challenge was picking the 6 songs.
Boy. The amount of times we were like, oh, but this song, we gotta have, you know, oh mm-hmm. man.
And the reason we chose a smaller set versus the full thing is that we're still in development and mm-hmm. we know a lot is going to change, mm-hmm. but we wanted to pick 6 songs that represented the range of style in the show. But also give the most feel. Like, this is the energy of the show, and we hope you like it, and we hope you support us and join us on this crazy journey as we get to a full production, as we go to Broadway, all of the fun things to come. But our producers, 35th Parallel Productions, have been on this show since the beginning, and so they teamed up with Brainstorm Records and Yellow Sound Label, which are just amazing, amazing people and companies. So we're so lucky. And they, together with all of us and our orchestrators, Matt Castle and Frank Galgano, took our show, made it a 13-piece orchestra, booked the Power Station, which is
one of the best recording studios. Yes.
Yeah. Being in there was literal cloud nine. And then we got a cast of it was 24 or something of the most incredible artists singing these parts. Our ensemble is stacked with stars. Our stars are stars. They're just, we couldn't be luckier. But then not just them, our engineers, everyone running every piece of this album has been so inspiring. And just, we're so grateful for the work that everyone's done, even down to the people who took videos of it. It's all been so professional and so like groundbreaking for this production.
And it's always such an incredible feeling when you're sitting in the recording studio and you actually get to hear the final, you know, one of the first rough takes of the full orchestra with the vocalists, and everything comes together. It's sort of like, as you guys know, because you guys have done musical theater, it's sort of like that first Sitzprobe, where yes. you sit down for the first time with the orchestra, and because if you ever watch the videos online of the Broadway shows when they're doing it, I don't care how jaded you think you are and how many shows you've done, that first Sitzprobe is always so exciting and so fun. And it must have been the same way when you were in the recording studio for this.
I mean, even hearing the 13 instruments start tuning, we could have been doing cartwheels through that studio. Like, we were losing our minds. And the first time they like played the first chord of Revolutionary and just kicked off that song, because that was the first one they did in the studio. And Lisette just like grabbed my arm and she's like, oh my God. And I was like, no, it's just like, I don't think that's ever going to get old. I hope that we get to hear, you know, experience this happen a lot more in our careers. But I think it's safe to say that's never going to get old, hearing it for the first time.
So what are the next steps? Now that your baby basically has taken its first steps in a recording studio, mm-hmm. What's next for the show?
Next for the show is going to be a full production. And so we're going to be, you know, trying to look at theaters and get ready for that. There's, you know, as we know, there's a lot to be done between,
right.
you know, even a concert version and a production is miles apart. So we have a lot to do, but this, I think, album has really energized everybody to get moving on that. And that's part of why we really wanted to do the album, was we knowing that this is going to be a bigger show. We wanted to hear that big sound and get a feel for kind of what this could be, and what this is going to sound like. And that's really kind of helped us imagine the costumes and imagine the sets and even refine some of the scenes and think, you know, help with the development of it. Cause we're like, this is the scale of it now. Let's think about this. And so this album has, as fun as it has been and how excited we are to have it out in the world, it's also been very helpful for us and for our team for, you know, imagining that next step and really getting excited to start moving towards it. So we're hoping for that pretty soon, I think.
It's not often that you get, while you're writing, you get to hear what it will fully sound like. So I think, like Richie was saying, be able to close your eyes and actually hear it for real. You can really picture visuals that we haven't been able to think of yet. We already have some amazing projection designers on board and everything. I think just hearing these things is going to really help the design and creative team see it, because we've had readings, we've had concerts, but the readings have scripts and the actors are behind music stands. You just have to use your imagination. The concert, we had people in ball gowns. That was fun, but it wasn't, it wasn't like the full scale of anything. So really, really excited for this next step. And yes, it's going to be a lot of work, but like Richie said, I think we're all like, the train has left the station. We are ready.
Well, that's, I mean, the what I think people either do or do not understand, but an EP like this, especially a fully produced album like this, is a real momentum builder, because as you said, it allows anyone listening to it, especially potential producers/investors, to get a better visual sense in their minds as to the scale of the show and what it should look like. Now, not everybody's going to have exactly the same concept of exactly what it's going to look like, but that's okay, because it's still, like I said, it's a momentum builder, because once that's out, then it's much easier to get people on board with the show and keep the momentum going so that you can roll towards an actual full scale production. But it, you know, it takes time, but it's keeping that momentum going and keeping people interested and getting more and more people to hear it. So more and more people are aware and jump in. Right.
Absolutely.
So hopefully you guys will be back at some point real soon to talk about the actual Broadway opening or the regional theater opening somewhere.
That sounds great.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a very big proponent of the out of town tryout. And getting a regional, it's always wonderful to get a regional theater involved, because they kind of become an initial producer of the show. They become a real good partner for the show, and they help, you know, they ultimately can help shepherd it to where you really, really want to go, which is New York and a Broadway stage. And sometimes regional theaters are the best way to go, because they've got the budgets and they've got the resources and they've got a stage, and you are out of the glare of New York.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Because as you all know, and I've been through this too, because I've written librettos for shows before, and you, until it's up on its feet, you don't really know what you have. And once you get it up on its feet, then you kind of sit there and go, oh, I can see the mistakes. I can see this needs to be fixed. I can see that needs to be fixed. And so being able to tinker with it when you're not in New York is a blessing.
Totally.
So hopefully you guys will be back. I would love to have you back. But in the meantime, where can people find out about Madame Clicquot online?
It'll be once it's released on April 14th.
Right.
It'll be available on all streaming services. So Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, iTunes, anywhere you listen to music, it'll be available. You can make little TikTok snippets of it. You can find it on Instagram for your stories. It's everywhere. And then Richie and I both have websites and Instagram handles.
Sure, that's too.
I will make sure to put links on the page.
Great. Yeah. The show's Instagram is Madame Clicquot Musical.
Okay.
So post fun stuff there.
Perfect. Yeah. And they can follow, and they can follow the progress of the show. And they can also, because you guys, are you guys working on anything else individually, or are you working on anything else together?
Yes.
Like you don't have enough to do already.
I know. Right? I know. I think we're working on like 6 shows together at the moment in various, you know, stages of writing. And then we have our own stuff that we're working on separately. And it, yeah, we can't get enough.
Well, it's how did the pandemic affect you guys in terms of getting the show done?
Honestly, the pause helped the show in some mm-hmm. weird silver lining way, because we had time to, nothing was happening. So we had time to really evaluate with the state of the libretto. Were we historically accurate with all of our facts and everything? And then, you know, we really conquered virtual collaboration, and then we ended up both being living in the same area again. So then we, you know, got to be work in person again. So I think we got lucky in a weird way.
Right. And I think that's, I've heard that from quite a few people. It was sort of having the pause actually allowed people to focus much more attention on, not without having the distractions of everyday life, you had the chance to be creative and to focus on your work. And I think it was also good because I think it helped a lot of artists do a lot of self-reflection. And that I think has come out in their work, that they've mm-hmm. produced since then, because it's made people have a better understanding of their place in this business and their place in the world, and feeling much more that they can contribute more and more totally. Meaningful things.
Yeah, definitely.
So hopefully that is going to come out when Madame Clicquot hits the boards, they say. So it's been great to have you guys here. Thank you so much, Richard and Lisette. It's
Thank
great
you
to
so
meet
much for
you.
Having us. This has been awesome.
And I recommend people check out the EP, the 6 songs from the show, so that you can be kind of on the leading edge of awareness of this brand new musical. And it's always exciting to follow the path, right?
Yes.
Absolutely.
You are absolutely invited to that. Out of town and everything.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. I want at least halfway decent house seats.
Yes. Yes. We'll give you a glass of Veuve Clicquot while you're there.
I was gonna say you better be serving Veuve Clicquot at the show. That's gonna be rather embarrassing if you're not.
Right.
Thanks again, you guys.
Thank you so much. This has been wonderful.
By your side, we got our stained glass windows. No one to tell me the answer or plan with me through the night. Must I be the dreamer when I've never done that right? A woman, a widow, alone in every way. And now I have to stand here and find the strength to say, one more dare. How do I move forward now without him there? What do I do now? Rebuild or break? One more beginning. He'd say, think of the chance to take. Moment, so I refuse to wear black. I asked for a challenge, but this is not what I meant. Dear God, won't you please bring him back? They whisper, I wonder if they're finally satisfied. Who believes a woman like me could have any fight left inside? One more beginning. I should be moving forward now, but I need more.
if there's too much at stake. One more beginning, tell me what is the chance to take?
Here's the transfer of ownership.
A woman, a widow.
On this day, the 23rd of October, 1805, Clicquot and Moët wines will be merged.
Who believes a woman like me? He believed a woman like me.
Sign here.
Wait, Philippe. Don't sign that.
You're too late. With your husband deceased, it is Philippe's business, and he is choosing to sell.
Then sell it to me.
Don't be absurd. You can't afford it.
I will risk my inheritance.
Philippe, don't listen to her. She is grieving.
I will do this. And I will be damned if I lose the one part of Francois that's left. Do you understand?
This is madness. It has already been decided. Philippe?
Make him proud.
Forgive me for feeling the weight on my shoulders. How quickly the ground turned to sand.